Dangerous Ground, My Friendship with a Serial Killer, is the story of a bond as disturbing as it is unlikely, an investigation that crosses every ethical, moral, and journalistic line imaginable. In this unprecedented and provocative crime memoir, award-winning journalist M. William Phelps unravels his destructive friendship developed over the course of 5 years, 7,000 pages of letters, and hundreds of conversations with the charmingly manipulative psychopath known as the Happy Face Killer. The result is one of the most radical looks into a serial killer's mind in modern day history. Dangerous Ground is on sale now everywhere books are sold. For more info, visit mwilliamphelps.com. If you're a woman and you're not investing, that could be like losing a fresh new Benjamin every day. That's why there's Elevest, the online investment platform for women. Invest in specific life goals, such as buying a house, starting a business, or retiring your way on your terms. All you have to do is get started. And now, Court Junkie listeners can receive $100 towards your first funded goal when you sign up with Elevest. Visit elevest.com/court. That's ELLEVEST.com/court to receive $100 towards your first funded goal. And now, on to today's episode. It was Sunday, May 29th, 2016, and patrol officers in Hana, a small town located at the eastern end of Maui in Hawaii, were responding to an emergency call that came in at 4:41 p.m. A white SUV had been traveling south on Hana Highway when it collided into a wall and went over the cliff. When officers Ian Custer and Chase Bell arrived, they made their way down the terrain to the SUV at the bottom of the cliff. It had been a 115-foot fall, and the SUV was in bad shape. The rear was smashed, and all airbags had been deployed. It was lying on top of lava rock, surrounded by water. Officer Custer could see the driver still inside the vehicle, but he wasn't able to open the door to get to her. The SUV was still running, and the smell of gasoline was quickly filling the air. Officer Bell went to the rear passenger side, where the door was missing. He saw the passenger, who appeared to have been thrown into the back seat, and checked for a pulse, but there was none. The driver was still in the driver's seat. Her legs appeared to be pinned against the steering column. She was alive and conscious. By that time, a rescue crew and fire department had arrived. They started asking the driver questions, like what her name was and her birthday. She responded that her name was Alex, and she gave them her birthday, August 23, 1978. They asked her who the passenger was, and she said her name was Anna Duval. Officer Bell assisted the fire department with extracting Anna's body from the vehicle. She had major head trauma, broken bones, and there was foam coming out of her mouth. They then removed the driver so she could be airlifted to the hospital. Officer Custer caught a whiff of alcohol as they put her on the stretcher. Hi everyone, this is Jillian and you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 48. The driver was Alexandria Duval, and the passenger was her identical twin sister, Anastasia Duval. Alexandria was airlifted to the Maui Memorial Medical Center while it was determined that Anastasia had died at the scene of the crash. Officers responded to the hospital to let Alexandria know that her sister hadn't made it. She was being treated for minor injuries. It appeared lucky that she hadn't suffered a worse fate. After they gave her the news about her sister and what had happened, Alexandria seemed to be in denial and kept saying, "No, that can't be." But when the officers started asking her questions about how the crash had occurred, they noted that she became defensive and refused to answer them. She also refused to answer any questions about who the next of kin was, so the officers could notify them about Anastasia's death. But although Alexandria seemed unwilling to speak with them, some witnesses to the crash weren't. Numerous witnesses told police that they saw and heard the twins arguing right before the crash, and a couple of them even said that it got physical. They saw the passenger pulling the driver's hair. Investigators thoroughly examined the vehicle, and when they looked at the airbag control module, they noted that at the time the SUV crashed into the wall and went over the cliff, the steering wheel had made a hard left turn, and instead of braking, the vehicle had actually accelerated, leading them to question, was the crash intentional? Meanwhile, Alexandria was released from the hospital the next day. Her arm was in a sling, but her injuries were minor. Investigators learned that she had purchased a plane ticket to her home state of New York, and so they decided to act. On June 3rd, 2016, less than a week after the crash, investigators found Alexandria at the Seaside Hotel in Kahului. She was placed under arrest and charged with second-degree murder. The prosecutor cited the eyewitness accounts, the airbag module report, and roadway debris at the scene. But just days later, on June 8, 2016, a judge dropped the charge against her, citing no probable cause. The prosecutor, John Kim, told reporters afterwards that he was disappointed in the judge's decision, saying that he believed that there was enough probable cause to show that the crash had been intentional. He said they would have to see what other evidence they could find after continuing with their investigation. Alexandria's attorney spoke to reporters too, telling them that Alexandria was grateful and wanted to go back to New York to be with her family and to attend her sister's funeral. But first, there was a pending charge on Alexandria's record that she was still being held on. She had been charged the prior December with disorderly conduct, meaning she had to post $3,000 bail before she was released. So, who were Alexandria and Anastasia Duval? Before I continue with this case, it's helpful to know a little bit more about the women's rather infamous background, who they were, and why investigators seemed so convinced that Alexandria would have tried to kill her sister. Alexandria and Anastasia were actually born as Allison and Anne Dadow in August 1978. They were born and raised in New Hartford, New York, as two of three children born to Dr. John E. Dadow, a prison doctor, and Maureen Dadow, his wife. The girls had an older sister named Amy, who was 2 years older than them. In 1983, when the girls were just 5 years old, they reportedly found their mother, Maureen, lying on their kitchen floor, dead from an apparent brief illness. The family eventually moved to Florida, and Alexandria and Anastasia went to college before the two moved to the Palm Beach area in 2008. They opened up their own yoga studio called Twin Power Yoga, which brought in a lot of business. In their company bio, they wrote, quote, "While searching for purpose in their own lives, the twins found a sanctuary in yoga. As they learned more about the yogic way, the two sisters fell in love with the practice and philosophy of yoga. Eventually, they realized that their highest purpose was to share the peace and serenity they encountered on their journey with others. Thus, Twin Power Yoga was born." The studio became so successful that they opened up another location in downtown West Palm Beach 3 years later and planned to open a third in Boca Raton. The twins reportedly drove matching Porsches and lived in a 16th floor apartment in an affluent apartment building in West Palm Beach. There were reports that they even were set to make a reality TV show, but it fell through in 2013. And then, just months later, Alexandria and Anastasia abruptly left town. They were in debt and couldn't afford to keep their yoga studios open anymore. They reportedly left so suddenly that they didn't tell anyone, nor did they pay their employees what they owed them or offer any refunds to their clients, some of whom had paid for year memberships. They moved across the country to Park City, Utah, and opened up another yoga studio there. It was here where they legally changed their names from Allison and Ann Dadow to Alexandria and Anastasia. But later that year, in November 2014, Alexandria filed for bankruptcy, and her sister filed just 5 weeks later. But their finances weren't their only struggles while in Utah. According to multiple reports, in January 2014, Alexandria and Anastasia were kicked out of a restaurant after getting drunk and threatening the owner, telling her that they were going to get the mafia to kill her. They then got into their car and drove off, but soon crashed their car into a ditch. When police arrived, they wrote in their report that the twins had been physically fighting with each other and pulling each other's hair. As they were being handcuffed, Anastasia reportedly started fighting with one of the officers while telling them to, quote, fuck off. They were both charged with public intoxication and disorderly conduct, and Anastasia was also charged with assault on a peace officer. And that wasn't all. Other reports indicate that the women were arrested on other occasions as well. Alexandria for DUI and fleeing the scene of an accident, and Anastasia for public intoxication and DUI. In October 2015, police reportedly responded to their home on a domestic violence call. And a month after that, they were called again after a woman accused them of stealing over $800 from her. In December 2015, Alexandria and Anastasia decided to move once again, this time leaving Utah for Hawaii. But their legal troubles continued in Hawaii. On Christmas Eve, they were cited for disorderly conduct and terroristic threatening. Warrants for their arrest were issued after they didn't show up for their hearings. And this was the charge that Alexandria had been held on after the second-degree murder charge had been dropped. She posted bail and soon after moved back to New York. But even though she was free, her past would definitely catch up to her. Just because Alexandria was back living in New York didn't mean that the headlines about the car crash went away. The Daily Mail posted an article with the headline, quote, "The Terrible Twins of Yoga, Hawaii Cliff Murder Sisters Are Accused Scammers." And another publication wrote, quote, "When Twins Try to Murder Each Other." But a new headline would soon be printed. In August 2016, 2 months after Alexandria had moved back to New York, she was arrested in Delaware County for driving drunk and nearly hitting a state trooper's car. According to reports, her blood alcohol level was more than 3 times the legal limit. She pleaded not guilty to aggravated driving while intoxicated. But her legal troubles, again, weren't over, because back in Hawaii, prosecutors had presented their evidence to a grand jury, and in November 2016, that grand jury then indicted Alexandria for the second-degree murder of her sister. She waived her extradition hearing and was sent back to Hawaii to face the charge. She pleaded not guilty, and although she was held on a $2 million bond, paid the $200,000 and was released in February 2017 while awaiting trial. And the wait wouldn't be without any pre-trial drama. In November 2017, 2 months before her trial was due to start, Alexandria's attorney filed a motion to dismiss the charge with prejudice, saying that during the grand jury testimony, a police officer misstated an eyewitness report and therefore misled the grand jury. The detective had told the grand jury that a witness had reported seeing the passenger pull the driver's hair while it was stopped in the middle of the road at about 4 or 4:30 p.m. on May 29th. One of the jurors then asked if the hair pulling had stopped when the vehicle went over the cliff, and the detective said yes. But according to the police report, that witness didn't tell the officer that the hair pulling had stopped before going off the cliff. And when the defense team interviewed the witness said that the hair pulling continued as the SUV sped towards the cliff. This was a crucial issue in the grand jury indicting her, the defense argued. In addition, they said that they had hired an accident reconstruction expert who disagreed with the prosecution's findings from the airbag module and said that the hair pulling could have led to erratic driving, which in turn caused the car to go over the cliff. The prosecutor, Emlyn Higa, responded to the motion saying that the hair pulling had no effect on Alexandria's driving and that the battle of the experts, so to speak, should be resolved by a jury. The judge agreed and denied the motion. The case would proceed to trial. In January 2018, Alexandria's trial began. She waived her right to a jury trial and instead chose to go before Judge Peter Cahill. In his brief opening statement, Prosecutor Higa said that the case comes down to just three facts.
It comes down to basically three facts that the evidence will show. That before, just before, that SUV went off the cliff, that there was no braking. Two, that there was hard acceleration. And three, that there was a hard left turn. Three categories of evidence will be presented to establish each of these three facts. And one is the physical evidence on the road that shows no braking, shows a hard acceleration, a hard left turn. Two is the eyewitness who saw it accelerating and taking a jerk to the left off the cliff. And three is the data retrieved from the SUV crash data recorder that indicated that the brakes were not used and quantifies the acceleration and the turn.
He said the evidence will show that Alexandria intentionally drove off the cliff, causing the death of her sister. In his opening statements, Alexandria's attorney, Bernie Bervar, said the case was a tragic accident, not murder, and that the state has the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt to prove that it was an intentional murder. He said their evidence will come in many forms.
We have eyewitness evidence. We have evidence from the road. We have evidence from the decedent's body. And we have evidence from the vehicle, both in the damage to the vehicle and in the computer data from the airbag control module, which measures in the last 5 seconds before the airbags are deployed, it measures the steering, the braking, the speed, and the acceleration. And it also tells you when the airbags went off.
He said several eyewitnesses will testify that the passenger was violently pulling his client's hair seconds before the collision. And the autopsy will show that Anastasia had long blonde hair in her hands. He said there was no criminal behavior on behalf of Alexandria whatsoever, and that she is not guilty. I'm going to take a quick break here to tell you about today's sponsors. And when the break is over, we'll get into the trial, and you'll hear some rather surprising testimony from Anastasia's boyfriend about Alexandria's behavior after the crash. I just have to tell you guys about my newest time-saving trick. I got my contact lens prescription renewed from my couch last week in under 5 minutes using an awesome new app called Simple Contacts. Simple Contacts lets you renew your prescription and reorder your brand of lenses from anywhere in minutes through an online self-guided vision test. Every test is designed and reviewed by doctors, so they are literally bringing the doctor's office to your home. Think of how much time you save compared to making an appointment, getting to the eye doctor, taking time off, etc. Better yet, the contact lens prices are unbeatable. The vision test is only $20 and shipping is free. I could not believe how easy this whole process was. Using the app, I was able to take a quick vision and eye redness test, and within minutes, I was reordering my contact lenses. Just like that. Just remember, this isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, but it is a great replacement for going through the hassle of having to go to the eye doctor to renew your prescription. And best of all, my listeners get $30 off their first Simple Contacts order. You really cannot beat that. Just go to simplecontacts.com/junkie or enter the code JUNKIE at checkout. Again, that's simplecontacts.com/junkie or just enter code JUNKIE at checkout for $30 off your contacts. This episode is also sponsored by Lisa. Driven by the mission to provide a better place to sleep for everybody, Lisa is an innovative direct-to-consumer online mattress brand that is also socially conscious. In fact, for every 10 mattresses Lisa sells, they donate one to a shelter through their 110 program. They also plant one tree for every mattress sold and donate 1% of each employee's time to volunteer for local causes. Not to mention, with a patented universal adaptive feel, Lisa is designed for all types of sleepers and features three premium foam layers, including 2-inch Avena foam top layer for cooling and breathability, 2-inch memory foam middle layer for body contouring and pressure relief, and 6-inch dense core support foam for durability and structure, which works for sleepers of all sizes. And now, Lisa is continuing to expand its offerings to include the Lisa pillow, blanket, foundation, and frame. No wonder it's a Forbes top 20 startup to watch. Try a Lisa mattress in your own home for 100 nights risk-free, available in the US, UK, Canada, and Germany online. With free shipping, this 100% American-made mattress ships compressed in a box right to your door. Or you can try it at the Lisa Dream Gallery in Soho, New York City, and Virginia Beach, and over 80 West Elm stores nationwide. Get $100 off when you go to lisa.com/junkie. That's LEESA.com/junkie. Officer Chase Bell was the first witness for the prosecution. He said that when he got to the crash site on May 29th on Hanna Highway, he noticed damage to the rock wall. He and his partner, Ian Custer, went down a trail to get to the SUV below. Photos of the wall and the crash site were shown to the court. He described going to the rear passenger side where the door was missing and seeing the passenger in the back seat and the driver stuck in the driver's seat behind the steering wheel. He said when the responders were asking Alexandria questions, they asked for her first and last name, but that she only gave them her first name, Alex. A man named Chad Smith was a resident of Hanna. He said that on May 29th, he was heading to St. Peter's Church, which was right near the crash site. He said he was driving south on Kuwiki Access Road when he saw a white SUV coming from the opposite direction. He saw two ladies inside arguing. He couldn't hear anything, but it looked like they were arguing with each other. He said he didn't see any physical fighting. As the SUV continued towards him, it became apparent that they were going to hit him if he didn't move, so he had to swerve to the side of the road to get out of their way. They passed him and continued to go north while he turned into the church area. The next witness was Anthony Fred Earls, a police evidence specialist with the Maui Police Department, who assisted in the execution of the search warrant on the white SUV. Photos of the vehicle were shown to the court, including a close-up of the passenger side visor. There were blonde hairs found on both sides of the visor. A man named Lawrence Lau, who lives on Oahu, told the judge that on May 29th, 2016, he was on Maui for a scouting trip. It was late afternoon and he was driving people to Hanna in a van. But he soon saw a vehicle facing him parked in the narrow portion of Hanna Road, leaving not enough room for him to go around, and so he had to stop. He said he stopped about 3 car lengths away and was head-on with the vehicle. He could see the driver's side but not the passenger side because of a glare on the windshield. He described what he saw.
I saw a woman that had, it was kind of a curly hair, and I saw what appeared to be fighting between the women. The hair was being yanked on. I could see a pair of arms from elbows to heads yanking the head of the driver, and the driver's head was being pulled to the side. The driver at one point turn and fought off the arms in this manner. I almost thought it was a joke that they were doing until I saw it being the head being jerked again, and then I knew that, oh, that was serious.
As he was describing how the driver was fighting off the passenger, he moved his arms in an up-and-down motion. He said from the time he stopped the car to the time the car drove off, it was a good 10 seconds.
And then at the end of that 10 seconds, what happened?
The driver put the car in gear and stomped on the gas and drove, you know, started to drive past me very quickly.
Okay. Was her hair still being pulled at the time she put the car in gear?
When I was watching from the front, from what I could see in the front, I did not turn my head. Yes.
So while her hair was still being put, you saw her put the car in gear and stop on the gas?
Yes.
Well, I mean, you didn't see her foot.
I didn't stop on the gas, but the car was moving very quickly, yes.
Okay. Now, were you still able to see through the windshield as it was approaching your van to pass?
Yes.
And what was, if you noticed, what was the expression or demeanor of the driver?
It seemed to be very angry. I would be too if my hair was being pulled. Angry.
After the vehicle passed, he didn't see it again as he was driving. He said he was relieved that the SUV hadn't hit him. Maui police officer Justin Mauiola testified that he went to the hospital where Alexandria was to ask her for her next of kin so he could notify her family of Anastasia's death. But he said they couldn't get any information out of her. She just kept asking what happened. They told her that her sister was in the car and had died at the scene. He said her initial reaction was kind of hysterical. She kept looking back and forth between the officers and seemed to be in denial. He also said she smelled like alcohol. He said he didn't see a lot of emotion as far as crying, and he doesn't remember seeing any actual tears.
Did she, at that point then, give next of kin information to you?
No, at that point she became real defensive, refused to give anything more to us. We didn't get any statements out of her or anything like that.
Okay. Were you able to get close enough to her to detect any kind of odor?
Yes.
And what did you detect?
As we're trying to explain to her what happened, I immediately detected the odor of liquor coming from her.
Okay. Did you try to, as part of your investigation, document any of her injuries?
Yes.
In what way?
Just from what I could observe, and then I spoke with the doctor to kind of see what was happening.
Did you also try to take photos?
Yes.
Were you able to take any photos of her injuries?
I was not.
Why not?
She became real, I wouldn't say combative, but just real defensive as to what we were doing there, why we were asking questions. So she kind of started to back away from assisting us in any way with the investigation that we were there to investigate.
They eventually got the next of kin information after tracking down the owner of the SUV, which was registered to a man named Lonnie Dickerson, who happened to be Alexandria's boyfriend. Later that night, investigators went to Lonnie's address. There were two or three houses on the property. Lonnie let them into his residence, and Officer Mauiola noticed that there was a large picture on the wall of Alexandria and Anastasia in a yoga pose. He said it was so large that it seemed a little awkward to him. The officers explained to Lonnie that there had been a crash in his vehicle and that one woman was alive and another had died. They asked if Lonnie could identify which woman was alive and which one was deceased so they could make sure that they were identifying the right person since they were twins. Lonnie agreed and met them at the hospital. They went to Alexandria's room, and he immediately identified her as Alexandria.
What was the defendant's reaction to you and Lonnie speaking?
His reaction, her reaction to the conversation was she, like, would tell him to shut up, don't say anymore, you talk too much. She was making those statements to him as we were trying to have a conversation.
Okay.
Officer Mauiola testified that he went to the medical examiner's office and was told that Anastasia had clumps of hair in her hand and also on her chest, hair that wasn't hers. On June 3rd, 2016, 5 days after the crash, Mauiola said that he assisted in locating and arresting Alexandria for her sister's murder. They first went to Lonnie's house. They could see into the windows, and he said the house looked different. It was empty, and that large picture that he had seen just days earlier was no longer there. He said it looked like someone had moved out. They eventually located Alexandria at a hotel and arrested her. Cecilia Kapow lives on Maui, and on May 29, 2016, she said she saw a white SUV pull up and then park in front of her house as she was cleaning and grooming her dog in the front yard.
I heard a girl screaming, and the girl, I don't know who was screaming, but was screaming, and then his voice was saying, called a psychiatrist, and I turn around, I look, and I saw this girl with long hair, and she was parked on the wrong side of the road, on my side, facing towards Hana, from the south, she gave me, facing towards Hana, and I told her, whoever the girl was, I said, "What?" And she said, "Call a psychiatrist." I said, "No." I said, "What do you need?" "It's the police station."
She said the girl just looked at her. Then a man she knew named Randolph Castro drove up in a truck and she called out to him, "Are you going to Hana?" Randolph said yes. And she said, "Then take these girls. They need to go to the police station." Randolph said he would. She told the driver to follow him to the police station. She said the driver looked at her and nodded. She said she didn't see any physical fighting. She only heard screaming coming from the passenger. And that's when the driver had said, "I need a psychiatrist." She described the passenger as being very aggravated and said she sounded scared and fearful. Randolph Castro then took the stand next. He said that sometime in the afternoon on May 29th, about an hour before the crash, he was driving on Hana Highway, and in his rearview mirror, he saw a white SUV weaving on the road. He slowed down and let the SUV pass him, but he still kept his eye on it. He said he saw the SUV park in front of Cecilia Kapow's house on the wrong side of the road. He asked the car's occupants if they wanted him to call the police, and they started their car. He said he thought they were going to follow him, and so he went around them to lead the way. But he said that they stayed on the main highway and stopped as he went left and didn't follow him. So he stopped his car, got out, and walked over to them. He said he saw the driver and passenger physically fighting, tearing at each other's clothes. He walked back to his car because he didn't want to get involved. He said he never saw them again. Two other witnesses testified that they encountered the white SUV that day. One woman said that she saw the SUV stopped on Hana Highway, and when she went to go around it, the SUV started moving, and so she had to swerve to the left to avoid getting hit. She said she was able to pass it by going into the oncoming lane. Her husband then testified that as they were passing the SUV, he saw a woman in the driver's seat and could hear yelling coming from someone other than the driver. The next witness was Anastasia's boyfriend at the time of the crash, Federico Bailey. Anastasia and Alexandria had been living with their respective boyfriends, Federico and Lonnie, in a spacious house in the Haikou neighborhood on Maui. He said he and Anastasia had an instant bond from the day they met and that they were very close. But he described his relationship with Alexandria as hit and miss. Sometimes they got along, and sometimes they didn't. He said the twins got into arguments quite often, and that their arguments often turned physical. He told the court that it happened about every 2 or 3 days, where they would, quote, fight like men and punch each other. He also said the sisters were big wine drinkers and that alcohol seemed to fuel their fights. On the weekend of the crash, Federico said that he and Anastasia had plans to go camping and that they didn't want Alexandria to find out about it because they didn't want her to go. But Alexandria did find out about it and ended up tagging along with them, which led to many arguments between the two sisters that weekend. He recalled that on Saturday, the day before the crash, Anastasia was really bitchy towards Alexandria and that he was trying to keep things calm. On Sunday morning, he said the sisters began to physically fight. He and Anastasia had fallen asleep in the SUV, and Alexandria came up to the vehicle, and she and Anastasia started fighting. He said he was in the back seat while they were in the front, and that they kept punching, hitting, and slapping each other. He said it lasted for about 5 minutes. At some point, they started driving around, while the sisters continued to argue. He said it was so overwhelming that he started to cry. Anastasia then crawled into the back seat with him to comfort him. He said Anastasia got mad at him too that day for not putting up a canopy when it had rained, and he said she was throwing wet clothes at him and emptying drinks on his head. It was a fiasco, he said. A little bit later, he went off to the bathroom, and when he got back to the campsite, Alexandria and Anastasia were gone. He said that that was the last time he ever saw his girlfriend. He stayed at the campsite that night until the next morning, and when the sisters still hadn't come back, he left on foot and walked to the highway to hitch a ride home. He said when he got into Hana, he heard about the wreck from a friend of his. Later that night, at their house, Lonnie pulled up in his car with Alexandria in the passenger seat. He said he was shocked that she was out of the hospital so soon. He said he wanted to know what happened and how Anastasia could be deceased, but Alexandria wouldn't answer his questions. Then, according to his testimony, things got a little bizarre, to say the least. According to Federico, Alexandria started getting flirty with him. She sat close to him and laid her head on his shoulder. He said that she had blood in her hair and asked him to help her wash it out. He thought that she would lead him to the sink, but instead, she took him to Anastasia's shower. At one point, she was going to take off her clothes, and he told her to at least put a bathing suit on. He told the judge that he was very uncomfortable at this point, but he gave her a shower. And afterwards, Alexandria put on Anastasia's dress. He said it was disturbing because Anastasia had just worn that dress a few nights before. When asked if he had said anything to her about it, he said no, because he didn't know what he was dealing with at the time. He said he didn't want to trigger anything that would cause any violence. Federico said he continued to ask Alexandria questions about the crash, who had been driving, how it had happened. At first, she seemed like she was going to answer him, but then she avoided it. She wouldn't tell him who was driving, and he said he felt like she was playing games with him. Alexandria told him that she needed to go identify Anastasia's body, and she said she wanted him to go with her. He told the court that he couldn't face the thought of seeing Anastasia like that, but that it seemed like Alexandria wanted to go. He said Lonnie had left the house at some point to go get her medication that she had been prescribed, and while he was gone, Alexandria started looking for a bottle of champagne. Federico said he noticed that they had had shopping bags with them and that they apparently had bought champagne on their way home from the hospital. On cross-examination, Federico answered questions about driving Alexandria's Porsche after she was arrested, and his prior criminal record, which included theft in Texas. He said he did interviews with Dateline, Good Morning America, and Crime Watch Daily, but that no payment was ever offered or solicited. Another Maui police officer, Sergeant Lawrence Beecraft, was trained in vehicle crash reconstructions. He said that when he arrived on the scene at about 7 p.m. the night of the crash, he saw the tire marks on the road, but he knew immediately that they were not from braking. These marks were from a tire that was rolling and side-slipping, he said. He testified that according to the SUV's control data recorder, the SUV was going straight before taking a hard left turn and accelerating, quote, all the way to the floor. He said that the vehicle went through a gap between two rock walls on Hana Highway and that the passenger side hit one of the rock walls before going over the cliff. And with that, the prosecution rested. The defense called Wayne Slagle, an expert in accident reconstruction and engineering, to the stand. He told the court that he reviewed the police report, the grand jury testimony, witness statements, and data from the SUV. He went to the accident scene, took photos and measurements, and then went to the police impound lot to inspect the vehicle. He said he disagreed with the prosecution's findings that the driver had sharply turned left and accelerated in order to intentionally go over the cliff. He said that in his opinion, the front left tire got caught in the dirt berm, which caused the vehicle to shift and rotate to the right. He said the passenger side hit the rock wall and that the left front tire went airborne, increasing the speed of the vehicle because it was not touching the ground, but going over the edge. No seatbelts were worn and both sisters were first thrown forward, but the driver had the advantage of the steering wheel. As the car crashed into the ground and rolled over, the passenger was thrown towards the roof and then ended up in the back of the car. The state called Sergeant Beecraft back to the stand during their rebuttal case to refute Wayne Slagle's testimony. Beecraft testified that the data shows that the SUV was clearly on the roadway when the sharp turn occurred and that it was nowhere near the dirt berm when that happened. But Judge Cahill granted the defense's request to strike Sergeant Beecraft's rebuttal after the defense said that a police officer who had been watching the trial testimony in court admitted that she had spoken to Sergeant Beecraft after Wayne's testimony and that she had told him how she disagreed with it. Judge Cahill took some time to reach his verdict and then made his announcement, going into detail about what he believed and what he didn't. He said one of the most dramatic pieces of evidence in this case was the hair found in Anastasia's hand and on her chest.
Why is Justin Maliola's testimony to me so dramatic and so critical? Because when he observes the body, not only does there's the hair, the one or two hairs in Anna's hand, there's a clump of hair sitting on her chest. And Justin Maliola said, his testimony was, it wasn't the deceased's hair. There's only one other person whose hair that could be, and that was the defendant's hair. That tells me that during the critical period, which is 5 seconds, okay, we just began and ended this entire case, that 5 second critical period, the deceased pulled her sister's hair so hard that she could yank it out of her scalp. Now, I don't have enough hair to yank, but I can't imagine that even been done. The amount of force that must have been done in order to yank somebody's hair. Now, someone could say, well, it could have happened in the impact. It could have happened during the crash. But as Mr. Hegan said, you've got to corroborate all your evidence. And the corroborative evidence is the eyewitnesses. And that same hair pulling continued throughout this matter. And they were both pulling each other and both doing things. But the critical part is that it was the passenger at the critical moment of this case who was pulling the defendant's hair.
He addressed the sudden swerve to the left and said that he believes Wayne Slagle's testimony.
Sergeant Beecraft testified that this was an oversteering situation. Too much steering input, too fast. The vehicle started to fishtail. We have the skid marks on the road. They're documented in the photographs. And I will say, the third skid mark, which is the right rear passenger, when it comes around and goes to the right, is very hard to see. But Mr. Slagle agreed it's there, and I've looked at these photos over and over again, and you can make out a faint outline. And in that respect, I do rely upon Sergeant Beecraft, Officer Ehlers, and the other police officers who said they saw it. I find that to be credible and believable. It doesn't indicate, though, there's a left turn like we would think. You're making a left turn. It's a vehicle that's fishtailing and skidding across the roadway. And where does it impact? There is no evidence that the defendant was aiming towards this hole in the wall. In fact, the vehicle crashes into the end of the wall on the southern portion where there's the gap. It crashes into the wall, at least on the right side in the front, and then it's ramped or launched out and over the cliff.
He then said it's reasonable to conclude that the hair pulling and fighting is what made Alexandria lose control of her vehicle.
After reviewing all of the evidence in the case, after assessing the credibility of the witnesses, after looking at the data, taking into account everybody that's testified here, accepting some testimony, rejecting some other, I find that the state has not proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
He found Alexandria not guilty, and she was acquitted of second-degree murder.
You know, the case was very, very unusual in so many different ways, but the circumstances and these two young ladies are obviously a bizarre pair. And that adds sort of to the intrigue of the case, but it doesn't leave anybody with a really good taste in their mouth about, one, these defendants, and two, the actions that occurred.
I had a few legal questions after researching this case, so I reached out to former Hawaii prosecutor Peter Carlisle. One of my main questions was, why the second-degree murder charge as opposed to a lesser charge?
They could have probably charged with lesser offenses, but the answer is obviously the prosecutor who tried the case felt that there was probable cause to be able to bring the murder charge. And since the murder charge wasn't dismissed before the trial, then it appears to me, at least, that there is a likelihood that there was a strong feeling that there was probable cause, which isn't a particularly high level. And it can be brought in a number of ways. It can be brought by indictment, and it can be brought by information charging. So there's a series of different ways it could have occurred in terms of bringing the case.
Next up, I asked about something that you court junkies probably noticed too. During the trial, there were two officers, Officer Custer and Officer Mauiola, who testified that they could smell alcohol on Alexandria after the crash. So why were there no alcohol-related charges?
Well, you could use, if it was a lesser offense that was brought, if you go from murder down to a reckless killing, then alcohol could be a factor. But then again, I saw nothing that suggested that there was a blood alcohol level that was proven. And remember, you can, you know, take a swig of alcohol if you want, and unless you get above a certain level, blood alcohol level, it's pretty much irrelevant.
I asked him where the prosecution's case went wrong. His answer, when they decided to pursue the case, even after the judge threw it out and dismissed the charges.
There wasn't, in the judge's mind, sufficient evidence to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. And in that circumstance, this judge is well-respected, he's intelligent, and so he looked at this and said, hey, look, this isn't sufficient evidence to get a conviction.
So if Alexandria had been found guilty of second-degree murder, what sort of sentence would she have received?
If she'd been found guilty of murder, it would have been an automatic life sentence, period. There's not, murder in the second degree carries life with the possibility of parole. Only a first degree carries life without the possibility of parole. But anybody who is convicted of murder in the second degree is going to jail for life in Hawaii.
And that's all for today's episode. A special thank you to Peter Carlisle for taking the time to answer my legal questions. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'd also, as always, love to know your thoughts on the case. Do you agree with the judge's decision? And do you think that there was enough evidence to charge Alexandria with second-degree murder in the first place? Let me know by joining my Facebook discussion group by going to courtjunkie.com/Facebook, tweeting me at courtjunkiepod, or by sending me an email at podcast@courtjunkie.com. As a reminder, if you want to hear these episodes earlier than everyone else and ad-free, you can do that by donating as little as $1 a month to this podcast. Just go to courtjunkie.com/support. That will lead you to my Patreon page where you can sign up and get an exclusive, early, ad-free RSS feed that you can add to any podcast listening app. And if you donate $3 or more, I'll send you some Court Junkie stickers. That's courtjunkie.com/support. Thanks everyone for listening. Until next time.